Benjamin Franklin, The Boy at the Sign of the Blue Ball. When the city of Boston was a village of winding lanes, and the Boston men wore their hair braided in pigtails down their backs, and there were no flying machines or ice cream sodas in all the world, a fat little boy in a strange three-cornered hat and buckled shoes was driving his father's red muley cow down from her pasture on Beacon Hill, where the State House now stands, over the common to the small brown house across the street from the Old South Church. Even in the 18th century, the old church was there, and when this same little boy was 10 hours old, his father had bundled him up and carried him into the church, and there he had been baptized, Benjamin Franklin. It must have been hard work for the Franklin father to find different names for his 17 sons and daughters. Think of it. 16 brothers and sisters for little Benjamin. When he grew up, he could remember sitting at the table with 13 of them. Sometimes, in fact, nearly always, the food on the table was very plain. Boys and girls have large appetites, and the Franklin family's purse was thin and had to be stretched. But the children were taught not to criticize the food before them. Instead of grumbling at their salt pork and oatmeal, they listened while the older ones discussed business, books, and the affairs of the country. When Franklin was a grown-up man, he never noticed what he was eating because he had been taught not to think about food when he was a child. There were no big stores in those days, only little dark shops with small diamond-shaped window panes and high counters. And instead of painted signs over the doors, as we have nowadays, there were strange figures and images. Over a butcher shop, for example, there would be a wooden bull's head, and the shop would be called The Sign of the Bull. Benjamin's father kept a candle and soap shop. Over the door swung a wooden ball, the size of a coconut, painted blue, so he named his shop The Sign of the Blue Ball. Mr. Franklin thought that all children should be taught to do some useful work and planned to bring up Benjamin in his own trade. But little Benjamin did not like the idea of being a candle maker, of dipping wicks into melted grease, filling molds, and selling a few pennies worth of soft soap across the counter at the Sign of the Blue Ball all his life. Even when he was only a baby, instead of eating his bread and milk, he would sit up straight in his high chair and listen while his father read poetry aloud. He showed such an interest in books as he grew into going to school age that his father decided to make a preacher of him. And so when Benjamin was 8 years old, he put on a fine new waistcoat and his best shoes with shiny buckles and started out to school. He studied so hard that he went to the head of his class in a few months and was put into a higher one. Then he left the grammar school and went to a private master who taught him penmanship and tried to teach him ciphering, or arithmetic as we call it. But little Benjamin had not gone to school a year altogether when his father found that he could not afford to let him go any longer. And that was the last of Benjamin's school days. Not that he never learned anything more in his life. No, indeed. Benjamin Franklin learned something new and useful every day of his life, and he remembered what he learned. Some boys fall over a stone one day, and the next day fall over the same stone again. Other boys fall once and remember the next time that the stone is there. Benjamin always remembered, as this story about the whistle shows. One day his mother gave him a few pennies, and he started out from home to spend them, very happy and proud. As he was looking into the different shop windows to see what he wanted to buy, he met a boy with a bright tin whistle. It was such a very bright whistle, with such a shrill, loud, cheerful voice, that Benjamin was delighted with it and immediately set out for a toy shop to find one like it. "Do you keep whistles, sir?" he asked the man behind the dolls and drums. "Yes, indeed. How much do you want to pay for one?" replied the shopkeeper, placing a long row of wooden and tin whistles on the counter. "I will give you all the money I have," said Benjamin, handing his handful of pennies to the man and picking out from the row a bright tin whistle with a cheerful voice. All the way home he blew his whistle and was very proud of himself for spending his money so wisely. But when he showed his purchase to the family, his brothers all laughed at him. "You paid 4 times as much as it was worth, they told him. Poor little Benjamin burst into tears and threw away the whistle, for he did not want to play with it any longer. But he never forgot about it. When he was a grown-up man and wanted to buy something that he did not need, he would say to himself, "Don't pay too much for the whistle." After he left school, Benjamin went to work at the sign of the Blue Ball. He cut wicks for the candles, tended shop, and ran errands. But all the time his brain was busier than his fingers, planning what he wanted to be when he became a man. He preferred making candles to starving, but he preferred a great many other things to making candles. Best of all, he thought he would like to go to sea as a cabin boy. As those of you who have been through your geography know, Boston is built on a bay. Benjamin and his friends used to go down to the wharves and go in rowing and swimming, as all boys like to do. When the water of the Atlantic was too cold, they went to the pond in the pasture that is now Boston Common. Here Benjamin invented a new way to swim, a lazy man's way. He brought a kite down to the pond, tied the string to a stick, and, lying on his back in the water, let the kite draw him swiftly across the pond in the direction of the wind. Benjamin was the leader of the boys of Boston. Sometimes, though not often, he led them into trouble and a whipping. There was an old salt marsh on the edge of the town where the boys fished for minnows. They tramped and stamped on the soggy ground so much that they turned it into a mud hole, very uncomfortable to small bare feet, very dirty for small buckled shoes. So Benjamin set his wits to work and soon had an idea. Near the marsh, a new stone house was being built, and heaps of granite blocks lay about temptingly. Benjamin and his faithful friends waited until dusk. Then, by the light of the round-eyed, astonished-looking midsummer moon, they tugged those heavy stone blocks, one by one, to the edge of the marsh, and built a neat little wharf with them. The next morning, when the workmen came to go on with the building, the house, there was nothing to build a house with. For a moment, it almost seemed as though fairies or tricky elves had come during the night and stolen the stones out of pure mischief. Of course, the wharf was finally discovered, and the young builders punished in various ways by their various fathers and mothers. But Benjamin did not use his brain solely for hatching mischief, you may be sure. While he dipped the white cotton wicks in the iron pot full of melted wax, he was busy with his plans for growing up. Sometimes, I must confess, he was so busy with the plans that the candle became crooked and out of shape. Benjamin's father soon noticed that the boy's mind was not in the candle pot. So one day he took him on a sightseeing trip among the shops, pointing out to the boy the different trades of brazier, turner, bricklayer, joiner, or as we would call them now, brass maker, mechanic, mason, and carpenter, and telling Benjamin to choose which one he would like to follow. There's not much difference between 17th-century boys and 20th-century ones, after all. They all like jackknives, for instance. Benjamin thought it would be a fine thing to be a cutler and make all the pocket knives that he and his friends wanted. But his father finally decided to set the boy to work as an apprentice to another son, James, who kept a printing shop. James agreed to hire Benjamin and to give him his board and clothes for wages. That was not very much pay, you may think. Perhaps little Benjamin thought so, too. By this time, he was 12 years old and liked spending money as well as most children. Yet he did not care to buy toys or toffee or to go to the pantomime or the Punch and Judy show. He wanted to buy books. And so he decided on a way to make money. He went to his brother James and asked that half of the cost of his board be given to him. That meant that every week Benjamin was to receive $2, and out of this he planned to buy his own food and to save a part for books. His brother did not think it possible that the boy could do this, but he was willing to let him try, and Benjamin actually managed to save $1 a week out of the two to buy Pilgrim's Progress and Robinson Crusoe, and other books which he used to read at lunchtime and in the evenings. And he did not go hungry either, although you might prefer beefsteak and apple pie and layer cake to the food Benjamin bought, cooked, and ate. He had rice and boiled potatoes, hasty pudding, rye bread, and raisins. You see, Benjamin cared more for books to put into his brain than for goodies to put into his stomach. He was very careful of his books and kept them clean and whole, as everybody ought to do, and not everybody does. And besides reading, Benjamin used to write. One day his brother James found him bending over a piece of paper on which he had written two poems. James read them and liked them so well that he let his brother print them on the printing press and sell them on the street. Benjamin made quite a good deal of money in that way. Sometimes he wrote long articles and slipped them under the door of his brother's shop when no one saw him. James printed these in his newspaper, never guessing that, of all the people in the world, his young brother could have written them. But James grew unreasonable and began to beat Benjamin cruelly when he made a mistake. So Benjamin resolved to run away. He stole down to Boston Harbor at night, got on board a ship, and sailed away from his home city, taking with him an extra pair of stockings and a clean shirt stuffed into his pockets, and nothing else but the clothes he wore, a courageous, persevering spirit, and an upright, honorable heart. Benjamin went first to New York, but finding no work there, he went on to Philadelphia, sometimes walking for miles along the rocky, untraveled road, sleeping in the fields, and eating very little, you may be sure. When he finally reached Philadelphia, dirty, tired, and hungry, he had exactly $1 left in the world. With part of this money, he bought 3 puffy rolls at a baker's shop and walked up Market Street, carrying one roll under each arm and munching the third. In the doorway of one of the houses that he passed stood a pretty girl with long fair curls and gentle eyes. She gazed curiously at this strange boy trudging by, eating his roll, his pockets stuffed out with socks and shirt. He looked quite ridiculous to her. Though this was the first time Benjamin Franklin and the Reed girl saw each other, it was not by any means the last time. Years afterwards, he married her. It was not long before Franklin found a position in a printing office and began to work in earnest. How well he worked, you can understand from his later life when he was a great writer, inventor, and statesman. There is an old saying, "Jack at all trades, good at none," but this does not apply to Benjamin Franklin. Whatever he tried as a boy and as a man, he succeeded in doing, and doing well, because he had patience, courage, and industry. These are 3 very valuable things to carry along when a boy starts out to seek his fortune. They will help any boy to find the good fortune of a splendid reputation, the confidence of everyone who knows him, and the love and respect of future generations, just as they helped Benjamin Franklin to gain these things.